Hey Jess, how's it going?
It's going okay. I'm still reflecting on Plan A's almost decade in operation.
Oh, yeah. It's getting there. Yeah. Maybe
it's getting there. A couple more months, I think.
No. 2017, I think, is when we started, no? Or is it 2016?
Late
2016,
yeah.
2017, yeah.
Because it would have been after we connected, like, when we were both like, what the fuck, after Trump got elected the first time. So yeah. It would have been like, okay, so not quite 10 years, but still a long time. And I will add, we've outlasted many of our enemies out there.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I feel like we started out like bashing Boba Libs and stuff like that. And now we're in a whole new world. We really are. And I think we fairly predicted this would be the pattern, like the direction of where things were going.
Directionally, we were correct, I think. I'm going to give us a little pat on the back.
What do you think for exactly? I mean, mm-hmm. we made many predictions, but what do you think? What on your mind do you think we got right?
I think, and I'm going to give a lot of credit to WMAF Discourse on this one, for me personally at least. It was a, like...
Never my favorite topic, by the way, but clearly a topic that people really wanted to hear about.
Yeah, neither was it mine, right? However, like, I think it was kind of interesting, if not just, like, fun to play with it, to think through it, because it kind of was like a skeleton key that unlocked a whole bunch of other shit. So, I mean, through this one vector, I mean, like we really went in a bunch of different directions, both broad and deep. So we really unpacked like a centuries-long geopolitical struggle. We unpacked like the media architecture that supports one ideological direction or another and how that impacts people. We were talking about like a dating gap or a loneliness crisis long before like it really just hit any kind of mainstream consciousness, like talking about the asymmetry of like the dating apps, how toxic online, you know, forming kind of a conception of yourself as a sexual and like romantic like partner, having it formed entirely through the bubble of the media and the ideological hold it can get on you and the commercial interests that are at play in getting into this.
Yeah.
And then just reading think pieces on it kind of got us all, got all of our claws sharpened to be like, no, this is fucking bullshit and here's why. So I think we just had an inherent like distrust of the printed word that gave us a particular kind of, I don't know if edge is the right word, but at least like the scaffolding to then start to unpack like bigger issues. It's like, so like an inbuilt skepticism that is still like grounded in actual reality.
Yeah. You know, funny, Chris hasn't been on the pod in a long time, but
I want to continue that just a little bit.
Oh yeah. Sorry. Go ahead. Yeah. You
know, so that's you know, kind of like the bread and butter, the stuff we talked about, right? The substrate of the kind of content that we were putting out in the early years. Behind the scenes, I'm also going to give us a lot of credit. Like, we fought, we argued, right? We were never a group that all...
Oh, you mean amongst ourselves?
Yeah, amongst ourselves, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, we were never... Like,
I will say, you and I never really fought. I don't think you and I ever had much of a disagreement.
Yeah, we never really... We never, like, had a drag-out thing. No, but, like, you remember? Like,
yeah, of course.
Like, we've all stormed out of the Slack or something at one point. We're like, fuck you, this is...
Mm. Oh, there was so much drama, yeah.
But I mean, I'm giving this a lot of credit here because like we were never interested in ideological purity. We never insisted on groupthink or that we all had to be in alignment on the stuff we put out. Like if somebody had a topic, I mean, it's a lot smaller now. I think it's basically just you producing the whole thing, but like, it's like the team is still around. Like,
we're all still friends. Like, we talk all the time. I hang out with Chris.
Yeah,
I hang out with Adam, you know, like I hope
like
to hang
we're
out
all
with,
friends.
Yeah.
We're all friends. And if they're a little bit quieter now, that doesn't mean that they're gone. So we managed to maintain like friendships, and this is like, honestly, like I was kind of like a little bubbled prior to this. Like, I didn't really know many people on the East Coast before I met you guys. We started talking, so kind of like it gave me like a little bit more perspective personally on just, you know, the state of things in the world that I live in. I mean, that's a little off topic, but we never insisted on ideological purity.
I think it's super on topic. I think it's super on topic.
But like basically how it worked was anybody who had something that they wanted to talk about, like the mic was yours, right? We never had to have group consensus on anything. It really was just like, fuck it. Like, there's no such thing as contradicting ourselves because we're all our own people here. And we navigated a ton of drama, a ton of conflict, both within and without. And we're still here.
I think you're right about the conflicts that we did have and the arguments and stuff. It was always about something that someone did or didn't do. It was never about an idea. It was never like, your take on interracial relationships is unacceptable. It was never like that, you know, like,
right.
It was always about,
it's not like if you don't say the right thing, you're out.
Right.
You know?
No, it was always because someone did something uncool.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it was something like that. Someone felt like, hey, that was a kind of bullshit move you pulled or something like that. And which by the way, I mean, it happens. Like, you know what I mean? Like you have, there's a group, and we're all trying to, you know, work together. And then sometimes someone fucks something up or acts like an asshole or whatever. And then we have a whole thing about it. And I don't think that's totally normal. I mean, I think that's just part of, you know, like you're not really friends unless you go through some shit. I mean, all my really close friends, I mean, we've been to battle against each other, you know, at certain points. Looking in the rearview mirror, those were certainly like not most of the time, you know, or anywhere close to most of the time. But I think without it, it would not have been the same because there is a certain kind of you kind of have to give a fuck to actually get into it. Mm-hmm. You know, I think not giving a fuck is like, all right, well, I'm just going to walk away then because you all are bitches, you know, like and just never talk to you guys again.
It's a demonstration that you always have one foot out the door. And like the shit doesn't matter that much. So the stakes are low. Like getting into it and being willing to like stand up for what you think and what you believe, even against people that you're close to or something, that means like there's stakes. And it's a sign that like our shit could take a little conflict too. We weren't going to break apart. Nothing totally irrevocable was going to happen because somebody disagreed.
Yeah, I mean, without giving away too many details, there was one person in particular I had a scream. I think you were on the phone with me.
Oh, yeah.
I had a screaming match with this person, and this person said, I don't have to take this shit. Fuck you. Like, who are you to yell at me? And I explained. I was like, no, it's, dude, like, you know, the reason I'm mad is because of, you know, you did this, and I felt like that was sort of a betrayal. And then that person immediately came back, was like, okay, because he understood. He was like, wait, okay, you're yelling at me because you care. You're not yelling at me just to abuse me. And I'm like, yeah, of course. Why the fuck else would I yell at you?
Yeah.
I mean, you know what I mean? I'm not in it to like hurt people for no, I mean, at no point, I think, you know, was there any sense like, oh yeah, we're a group of people that likes to casually abuse each other. No way.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So if someone was like worked up or upset, I mean, it was because there was something at stake. So, you know, I don't know. That was my take on it. Seems like you probably agree with that. I don't know.
I agree.
Yeah.
So, you know, just okay. I was off by a couple of years, apparently. It certainly felt like
but, you can round up to 10 pretty quickly from here.
Around. Yeah. It's like, a friend's grandma was like, you know, when you're at like the 9 years, like 29, 39, just round up. Cause no one's going to believe you're 29. No one's going to believe you say you're 29. Just round up. I'm like, okay. All right. We're 10 years old.
Yeah. 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 Just round up. Yeah.
Yeah.
The reason I think it is on point is because, you know, I used to joke about this, but I over time, I feel that it's becoming more and more just sort of like literally true in a way. Is like, I always kind of felt like we were a band of survivors in like a post-apocalyptic landscape. Nothing so dramatic in reality, but like it had the feeling of that where, you know, it seemed...
No, I think we talked about it before. That absolutely was the vibe. We were all like politically homeless people, kind of like beaten up by the outside world. And we finally like wander into the bombed out gym and we're like, holy shit, there's other people here.
Yeah. 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 It was like a beacon, you know, like, you know, those movies where the zombie movies where there's like every, you know, every week at a certain hour, there's like a beacon that's like, you know, come to the, you know, come, come to the White Fortress. And there's other survivors here. And it was, you know, 8 years ago, I mean, I don't think it was, clearly things were starting to break. I mean, with the Trump's first election, I mean, clearly something was breaking. But, you know, we had not yet experienced COVID. We had not yet experienced a lot of things that have occurred since COVID. That was just sort of like the beginning. And I feel like, personally, if we did not as a group spend as much time trying to figure out what the hell is going on around us, I don't think I would be as happy a person as I am now. I mean, I think I'd be racked with confusion and some anxiety and stuff. I feel like it really helps to just have a mental model that's that you can constantly corroborate with a group of trustworthy friends, a network of people. You can corroborate your view of reality with them and vice versa. And not feel like, you know, is everyone lying to me? Like, is everything just a fucking lie? You know, like,
exactly. Yeah. It's hard to tell like signal from noise. And that like, that like late 2010s era, that was a time of like intense society level gaslighting.
Yeah.
In my opinion. And then us being Asians, it felt like we were like the lagging, we were kind of like the last on the boat, which was frustrating in its own way. So I think a big like meta like purpose for what we were doing is kind of actually taking a deeper look and saying like, no, forget that we're bombarded with noise. What's the actual signal here? What's actually going on? Like what we're seeing cannot be the real thing. And all you trifling bitches out there are having petty, pointless fights over the over noise, and we're being told to miss the actual signal here.
Yeah, for sure.
Like just for sure. Arguing, like turning like the WMAF thing into just a simple like basically a status war between genders. That's the most idiotic way to go about tackling it, in my opinion. There are so many more interesting ways to think about what are the actual gears at work in this machine that we're all, you know, that we're all embedded in. And simply talk like, oh, Asian women are just status hungry, racist bitches.
Yeah.
That's a waste of brain capacity, bro.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it did help. I would say like, the specifics of the okay, this is what really helped me, I think, is I did get red pilled. I will say I think around that time I was starting to feel a little pull towards sort of like a red online red pilling, where I sensed a lot of guys online, Asian guys online in particular, pointing out things that I couldn't necessarily deny. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? Like they were saying things.
Yeah, that's part of it. So on the other side, it's a whole machine. Basic. That's part of the gaslighting and like machinery that, you know, that's loosely, I guess, like Democrat aligned, right? That just insisted on like, oh no, that's a lie. That's wrong think. And if you think that way, you're not welcome in the club, and you're gonna have to just go somewhere else. Just fucking die.
But it was create. I could sense also though that one of its intended effects is to create the backlash. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, it is.
I almost feel like now that I look back upon it, I feel like a lot of the gaslighting towards the taunting and the gaslighting about, you know, these incel Asian men who are dickless but also hypersexual and whatever, like all this stuff. It was meant not to be believed, but to be reacted against.
Right.
And you know what I mean?
You're circulating that for clout amongst a small group of cadres who are also clout farming in the exact same way, in the exact same circle.
Yeah.
And there's no way that they read this and press publish, and they did not anticipate the very predictable response that they would get. It's laughably simple, and it works.
And it's laughably simple. It works. And also, each of the groups that get targeted immediately take on a very particular and almost like segregated view of themselves, where it's like only Asian males get targeted like this.
Right. It induces this kind of claustrophobic, paranoid.
The whole world's against Asian men.
Yeah, specifically.
Yeah, even the Asian women are against Asian men. You know,
And
I saw this happening, and I was like, how deep are you guys going to take this? Like, you know, I think we did. If we did anything useful, I think it was to draw on this topic. I mean, I think it was to draw parallels with the same playbook being run in other contexts. It's literally not just Asian males, right? Like this is it's tailored so that the specific insecurities of Asian men as a response to sort of like racist tropes or whatever, that is tailored, but the overall strategy and the overall dynamic here is the same. And you know, we see this now. To me, it's almost like, you know, plainly obvious that that's the case. And I don't know, you know, I don't go on Reddit anymore or anything like that. I haven't been on there in ages, but like, you know, I hope that this is clearer to people now. I hope it is, because back then, 10 years ago, and for me, I've been involved in, because I was doing Reddit-centric podcasts and stuff like that, where I was trying to confront some of this stuff head on. I would say I hope that it's moved on past that. I don't know, but it seems to. It seems to have. I don't know.
I think the number, I could be mistaken, but the last time I looked, I didn't linger too long. It seemed like the total volume of posts and commenting and total viewership is down.
You mean for the manosphere, the Asian manosphere stuff? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And that doesn't mean it's not a mission accomplished, everybody go home kind of situation. You just don't know where, you know, this is probably brewing everywhere. But part of that, and I think this is a siren we've been kind of blasting for a long time. It's like, no, shit's about to get really real and hard and faster than any of us would like.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more like that same the mechanism that tried to keep everyone's issues tightly siloed, you know, bound by various identitarian segments, all that kind of came apart. Things are just getting shitty for everyone at basically the same rate. Essentially, there's less and less substrate to be able to feed this kind of really isolated grievance victim narrative. I mean, it became obvious to me, okay, there's these Asian guys talking in the specific way about how they're the most oppressed people. You hop over to a black space or a brown space or whatever other identitarian space, and it's the same thing. The exact same line.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So for all you guys talk about how you don't want to play oppression Olympics, I don't know what I'm looking at then. I don't know what you would call a thing that is obviously going on here then. So it's just thinking through these problems, what's the action? What are the threads that are connecting these things together? What could be a meta narrative? What's a societal purpose? Who's benefiting from this kind of this popularizing this kind of ideology or particular cultural, I don't know, way of being, right? Way of interacting with people or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I felt like that brought us into the COVID era better prepared than most, honestly. And I don't know if I did a very good job tying WMF to COVID, but something about thinking through like the various intersectional issues that came up through the years really prepared me personally, at least, to kind of, I think, to better understand where society is heading in the COVID and post-COVID eras.
Yeah, I mean, my overall mental model at that point, based on, you know, a lot of the stuff that we did, and back then we were writing more articles and I think being a little bit more analytical about it, was like, you know, there actually is an Asian American elite, a cultural elite. And, you know, we were starting to understand how they were selected and on what basis they were being selected and why. And mm-hmm. what kind of stories they were, you know, encouraged or allowed to tell, and what kind of
financially incentivized.
And what kind of research they could publish, and you know, that kind of thing. The stories that they were telling, and it was all contributing to, and you know, every group had their sort of like racialized cultural elite, and every group seemed to have the same gripes about them, and they were doing the same kind of thing, and it was all I think in service to sort of like using the gateway to elite status as a way to sort of recruit you know, a class of racial representatives that would essentially be able to control a given racial group, you know, be mm-hmm. it through the creation of mass entertainments that would drive the culture, drive the narrative, start to control how we think, all on the basis of race. You know what I mean? Right. Like, all on the basis of race. And so if you're Asian, like, you watch, you know, we're supposed to now watch Asian American content and stuff like this. And then that content would be produced specifically through, you know, these media channels by these kinds of people. And, you know, once I found out that it was going to be that guy, what's his name? Phil Yu? Or no, what was his name?
Wang?
No, the guy, the like fresh off the boat guy. Is that his name? Phil Yu?
I think so.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Once I forgot his name, but like the guy, you know what I'm talking about? The sort of like chubby, respectable bald guy whose son was, no, something Yang. What's his fucking name? His name's his son is Hudson. Let me see. Hudson Yang's father. I always forget this guy's name.
I mean, Jeff Yang. Pimps his son.
Jeff Yang.
Yeah, you're right.
Okay.
I mean, he pimps his son out so hard. Yeah, of course. You remember Hudson's name first.
Yeah. So once I realized, that, by the way, they were, you know, the kind of people that were going to be recruited into this sort of like construction of a synthetic Asian American culture that was completely bastardized of any real history or anything like that. It was simply racial exploitation media, as far as I'm concerned. Would they tell you the kind of things that you want to? And I still see this now. Actually, I think a lot of the stuff, not necessarily that we said, but that was being said by people online, including people like us, about interracial dating, about that kind of thing, about the gender imbalance or whatever, I think the culture industry picked up on that and used it in order to rope in attention.
Mm-hmm.
They knew what the hot topics were, how to get people's attention, and they focused in on that in order to draw eyeballs. And I think in the process, trying to construct this sort of Asian American, incipient Asian American culture that was going to be completely, you know, revisionist and created by people that should not and cannot be trusted, but they were going to use these hot button topics that all the guys and gals were super interested in to sell bullshit stories about, you know, who we are and where we come from, not just racially, mm-hmm. not just culturally, but even just as human beings,
right.
And you know, as part of this sort of liberal project. And I think I think we're living in a sort of post-liberal world. I'm not as worried about that stuff anymore because I feel like sitcoms are irrelevant. The culture industry has become irrelevant. I think we're in a post, I think we're in a sort of like, we're post mass industrial culture at this point, I think. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm biased just because I don't consume it.
I agree with you. The numbers show that you're correct, regardless. In retrospect, it looked like a kind of crypto scam. It's a bunch of people who were trying to rake in as much money using kind of us as the store of value, essentially.
Yeah.
To kind of grift, steal, scam, just make some bank and then bounce.
One of the things that I feel most most vindicated on was just the utter lies that were being said about China,
mm-hmm.
And North Korea at the time. And, you know, this insistence, you know, all the stuff there was like China was committing a genocide. China is a human rights, you know, like, you know, we need to fix and discipline China on the human rights stuff. Fast forward to 2025, you're like, nobody even talks about that stuff anymore. All of that stuff has been closed up. And anyone who was like getting money from the government, like Kaiser Kuo and his fucking China project bullshit, they were getting money from, they're clearly getting like state derived money mm-hmm. by their own words. And they had to close up shop because all that Uyghur genocide stuff just was gone. It was gone. They didn't want to talk. They didn't want to say the G word anymore after October 7.
Right. You
know what I mean? So, I think that, you know, just, I think we were starting to, I mean, you're right about the WMF narrative. I think that was very much a part of sort of like a liberal outlook. There was a soft cultural liberal side to this. And I think it was mostly about distraction. I think it was about getting people, finding the little cultural, psychosexual pressure points to rile up the masses, get them to turn on each other, have the Asian boys and Asian girls fighting, okay, in their own little spaces, and then feed them shit, feed both sides shit in order to further engender this fight. And meanwhile, on, you know, there's another layer that's just making just absolute political lies. And all of this rolls up into a much bigger thing that has, you know, Asians are, you know, Asian Americans are just a tiny little afterthought in the full scope of what it is. And yet we're directly connected to this process. And I guess for me, it's like, man, can you imagine if, because, dude, I mean, like, I think there are people, I know people who are my age, late 40s, 50s, or whatever, who are still kind of stuck in that mentality. They're still sort of bitter over the WMF stuff. They still have that psychosexual insecurity and sensitivity. They're still trapped in this tiny little Asian American identity bubble, this tiny little bubble in the ocean. And it's a mind killer. I feel like you'd just be trapped in, like, how can you live your life just worried about those little things? You know what I mean? I don't know.
Mm.
Maybe I'm being uncharitable here, but
that's being real. Hard to say it's not true or false or whatever, right? You're just talking on what you see.
Yeah.
For me, it's watching the slow death of the entire liberal project, the DNC-led liberal project in America. It's so pathetic now.
Oh God, it's so bad. It's so desperate.
There's people
and so
clinging
bad.
To it, just like the dredges of that very hollow, thin ideological veneer. That's basically the polite face of neoliberal fascism.
Yeah,
just people clinging to it for all they're worth, and just absolute. Like, it's actually sad to see people who are legitimately confused by what's going on. Like, they're not prepared, and they're insistent on staying in denial. And honestly, they're the people that can afford to stay in that denial because they tend to be the people who are beneficiaries of that system. And they're not really worried about society. They're worried about their position in it. Let's be real.
Have you noticed that there are, and I think I see a lot of these, you know, links in the Discord where we have some serious trash collectors who will post some trash links and
hats off to you guys. I barely need to read the news anymore. I just got to like open Discord and look at the links. Thank you guys.
The raccoon army.
Our trash army. Yeah.
But like, is it me or is it, there are a lot of like Asian American female influencers on TikTok that keep mining this whole WMAF thing for clout? Meaning,
I honestly would not know. We can have one of the trash collectors give a field report on that. But
yeah.
I'm not on TikTok. I'm not really on any of the social media platforms. I guess I'm officially an old now.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't know. But like I see them too. Like they tend to be very young. So like just this generation, this generation of influencers, we dealt with our own set like, you know, 8-10 years ago. These seem to be very young, like college age, maybe, if not a little past that. Like reviving the same old topics, just keeping this dialogue going.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know about their scale or their impact, but I mean they're out there. But also, like, it's hard to tell. Like, we're a tiny percentage of the population, but there are a lot of us. So it's, who knows how common or prevalent what they're like, how popular what they're saying is it actually is.
Yeah, dude, I have no idea what's going on with Asian American TikTok or any of that stuff. I have no idea. But, I don't know.
Like a thing that's actually kind of interesting to watch is how a lot of the things that the discourse that starts in these more siloed, like ethnically localized spaces are kind of just mainstream now. Like, I mean, people can't seem to stop talking about how much the dating apps suck. And we're talking like this is just an open conversation. This is like white guys saying like, oh, yeah, I get like 2 matches a year. And one of them is going to be from an OnlyFans girl or something like that.
Mm, yeah. Yeah. I feel like that stuff has, you know, once the white people started saying it, it got taken more seriously.
Of course it did.
Now it's starting, like, we've definitely moved on. Like, I don't hear the word incel used as much anymore. And I think now there's this, like, sort of, like, concern with societal collapse and TFR, total fertility rate. I hear that all the time. And I think the white race is in a panic in terms of its ability to reproduce. And, you know, now, I guess the funny thing is like, a lot of the sort of, like, psychosexual hang-ups of Asians, especially Asian men, but Asians generally, like when it came to WMF and all that stuff, I see it. I think that makes me kind of understand more, kind of, I think in a way we kind of better understand almost what's going on with white people than they do of themselves. Sure. You know what I mean? And I think broadly speaking, I think white people are turning into a kind of like white, lost white diaspora. They're starting to behave and think like a diaspora group that is like, I had this tweet that went pretty viral about how I feel like white people are kanging and they're making up a lot of shit about their racial background. And, you know, they're tying themselves to like the Roman Empire or like Vikings. I'm like, dude, you're like just a chinless white dude in Minneapolis. Like, what are you talking about? What are you talking? Like, what do you have to do with the Roman Empire? Do you know what I mean? But they're like trying to find some basis for like racialized manhood and pride. And I was like, oh yeah, Asian dudes used to do that. I don't know if they still do. Maybe they still do.
It's a sign of anxiety and it's a sign of impending loss of status. So we talked about this before. You came up, you coined this, and then I think we just elaborated. We just talked it out some. But like this vision of white America as this like de novo fatherless entity whose mission is to find like manifest destiny in conquering or, you know, in conquering new territory or something, or like becoming kings of this earth. But like fundamentally people without a past.
Mm-hmm.
It was always forward looking with a sense of destiny, of a grand destiny attached to it. That's a sign of people who feel powerful. When you start to look backwards, start to kind of cling, that's because you're missing something.
Right.
So I think that you're probably tying it back to, you know, that older thought you had. Like, it's white people finally like, oh my God, who am I actually? Like the bender's wearing off and they're waking up and they're in someplace foreign. They're like, oh, holy shit. Where do I live?
I mean, there's a resurgence of white nationalism, in my opinion. I mean, I don't know about real life, but like online, you see it casually about, let's face it, let's be realistic. This is a white nation. It's not a white nation. Never was. But, you know, there's a lot of white dudes now who are just sort of white nationalist in their thinking. And I think that it's actually white supremacist. But it's very casual now. It's not like a fringe thing. It's like a lot of people think this way. And it's becoming a bigger and bigger problem.
And probably. I can't say that I see that too much, but, you know, again, like, I'm just in my own little corner of the world. So
I have a nose for it. I think I feel like, you know, I never know if I'm right until years in the future, but like my suspicion is actually like white nationalism and white supremacy, and I'm talking like uncut Nazism, is coming back in a big way in America. And I think its first act will be the most forbidden of all, and which will give it permission to do everything else, which is it's going to engage in open anti-Semitism. And a lot of people are going to be okay with that because they're going to be able to employ a lot of, quote, good politics in bringing that out. So a guy like Jake Shields right now is quite popular online because he speaks out against Israel and he speaks for the Palestinians, but he's a Holocaust denier, you know, and the, you know, he's got defenders in that Jackson Hinkle ACP American Communist Party group and stuff like that. I know this is very fringe, but I feel like these are fringe sort of, the fringe here is sort of in a leading indicator of, I think, of what's coming around. And I got to tell you, Jess, I feel like things are going to take a pretty dark turn in the United States, for sure.
It's
going to get pretty fucking dark. Yeah.
We spent a lot of time over the past years watching fringe things become gradually more and more mainstream.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say that's very true.
So
disturbingly, you know, true. Yeah.
Right. Things that just even we would be talking amongst ourselves and like that, you know, that might be a little outlandish. And then boom, 2 years later, you know. So, I mean, and I think we're generally correct. Right. I was thinking about that the other day, too. Like people like talking about the deportations, the war against, you know, like that it's going to be a nascent, like white supremacist, white nationalist state. I'm actually not going to know where exactly the ideological arrow points until people start articulating where Jews fall on that.
Mm, yeah. We've already got that guy, Arthur Lee. I don't know if you've heard of this guy, but he's like a podcaster in a Korean Los Angeles, an Angeleno Korean who's just straight up, you know, pedal to the floor, right wing anti-Semitic all the way. And he's getting a lot of followers. And, you know, he's not being as canceled as I thought he would be. Which is strange. It's a strange thing to see. I'm just without even trying to pass judgment on it. It's like it's an odd thing to see, like a really dyed in the wool anti-Semitic Korean guy from Los Angeles doing a podcast about that.
Like, is he like on YouTube?
Oh yeah, he's all over YouTube. Okay. You know, he's all over Twitter.
So, like, the mainstream platform. It's not like he's, like, babbling on Truth Social or something.
No. Okay. And he gets quite a lot of attention these days.
Okay.
And it's just, I don't know. It's just weird. Do I have the right name? Is his name Arthur Lee? I forget. Arthur Kwan Lee, yeah, I think.
Okay. I'm going to have to look him up. But, like, you know how people were talking about, like,
yeah,
oh,
bad.
Like,
his handle online is Arthur Kwan Lee at Bad Asian, BADAZN, and his location is Jesus 110,000 followers on Twitter. I mean, not massive, but I mean, that's, you know, in a way, I think it's at that 100,000 level sort of thing. You start to see like the next sort of the sort of like incipient influencers there. That
sure.
And he reposts Jake Shields a lot. Jake Shields now, where's he at? He's at, Jake Shields is at 850. He's almost to 1 million followers now.
I mean, so, considering the platform is much smaller than it used to be, that actually could be a bigger indicator.
Yeah.
Especially if this guy's relatively new, like if he started after like the Elon takeover of Twitter and has a followership that big. Yeah, that means something. It's not like 2016 when you weren't really big on Twitter unless you had like 5 million.
Yeah.
Just because that was one of the three social media platforms at the time.
It's getting weird. The whole political landscape is getting super fucking weird and creepy. And you know, I really don't think that if you took the Asian American mindset from like 2015 or 2016 and teleported it 10 years into the future, what would that person think of today? How would they process what's going on? I mean, the only way to process it is to
ignore 2015 it. The 2015 liberal minded brain cannot comprehend.
Cannot
2025
comprehend. And let's face cannot it, comprehend. I think a lot of people are still there. I mean, I think a lot of the, I don't know. I mean, I feel like a lot of, you know, sort of suburban normies and stuff. I mean, like, you know, I don't think they, I think they just, their attitude, I think, is like, wow, this is crazy. I'm just going to tune it out.
Yeah, because those are people for whom this is, it's fair, you know, especially if you have families, I don't know how else you could kind of cope. You know, they're spending a ton, like I know a lot of friends who are, you know, personally doing this, they spend a ton of money to get a shitty little house, someplace quote safe, to kind of like cling to the last dregs of the middle class life, like buying essentially insulation from the problems. Everyone knows they're out there. We're just, these are the people that are like basically putting it all on the line to buy as much of a buffer as they can possibly get between them and the problem. But for now, their mindset is still like, that's still someone else's problem. For now, I still have the means to insulate myself from this issue as much as I can.
Yeah,
we all know that buffer is shrinking.
It's shrinking, but yeah.
But we can all sense that. But for now, these are the people right at that cusp. I was talking to a friend talking about like, you know, how dangerous things are actually like physically getting. Like I can watch I can see the decay in my own neighborhood. Like I bought my condo 2019, I think, somewhere around there. Didn't really have an issue. Like I can like drive down and see how shitty everything is getting. Like it seems like every week or something, like someone's TV gets stolen, like off the, you know, like someone's Amazon delivery gets stolen or a car gets broken into. My car has been broken into, parked in a closed garage multiple times.
Wow.
Stuff like that. And then like, I'm talking to my friend about this, like she just paid, she and her husband, you know, they're both worried about layoffs. They just had a baby. They're trying to figure out how to have number, you know, they're trying to figure things out. And then like, I'm just like talking about this. I'm like, I don't know what to do. Like, is it time for me to just like, should I be spending more time at the gun range or some shit? Like, what am I supposed to do? And they're like, oh, we don't believe in violence. Like, that didn't answer my concern here.
Mm-hmm.
Good for you. I don't know what that means. We don't believe in violence. What are you talking about? Like, I can see it. What am I supposed to do? Like, oh, I'm sorry. No, I like stop breaking into my car. I don't believe in violence.
Yeah, there's
that's not an answer.
I think it's that sort of like, don't pay attention to it, because if you do, you'll just encourage it kind of feeling, like a sort of like kind of a schoolyard type virtue of like, you know, if you see trouble, walk away.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's like we're running out of walk away space here.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's what we're talking about.
exactly. We're running out of walk away space. And
yeah. Or like the more like another like liberal, like minded answer to this. Oh, I wish we had more space to walk away from this. Okay, again. Are you seeing this shit right now?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not, that's the thing. I'm not particularly like politically activated, you know, like I'm not like some sort of radical or anything like that. I think I'm just really interested in trying to understand like what's happening right now and maybe have some guesses as to like where things are heading. That's my main interest. I'm not, you know, like I've never been like politically active and, you know, I mean, I have my own political preferences and stuff, but just trying to understand what's going on. And yeah, I think the idea of turning away from what's going on and saying, you know what, I'm just going to live my best life without knowing because all this shit is bullshit. Not optimal. I'm not saying absolutely don't do that, but I'm saying I don't think that you're going to get away with it and avoid bumping into it. Do you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. It's going to, what's happening out there, you know, not just socially, but also economically, environmentally, all that stuff, it is going to intrude into your life for fucking sure.
And at least, even if you feel it's far away, at least you should make sure that you don't get caught flat-footed if and when that moment does occur.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's been kind of my ethos.
What do you think? Do you still think it's like coming, like there's going to be a big sort of like climax to this, or do you think it's going to be sort of a slow motion kind of degradation, or what do you think is going to happen? What's your gut instinct tell you?
My gut instinct, I mean, I want there to be some sudden rupture, you know, where the uh-huh. old world gets swept away. And because selfishly, I'd like to be as young and nimble as possible. Because I'd really hate for this shit to happen when I'm like 82.
Right, right.
Do you know what I mean?
Right, sure.
So like the sooner it happens, the better it is for me because I'm more equipped to be able to navigate around it. Just taking a cold, hard look at it, like there's room for so much more degradation, more immiseration, in-shittification of everything. It really just depends on how much how fast they feel like squeezing the next 9. Is it the next 8 yet? Is it the next 7 yet?
Mm-hmm.
It's that group is still very potent because as much as we talk about the 1%, that next 9 is very powerful and very wealthy collectively. Like when we're talking about fuck the boomers, the rich boomers, they're all, that's most of the people in that next 9. That realistically speaking, there is so much more room to immiserate people before that sudden break happens and anarchy reigns.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my feeling, that it's going to get progressively shittier and shittier. It's going to be in fits and starts. I just don't see it getting suddenly worse or suddenly better.
Yeah, I think it's going to be kind of a grind too. I think it's going to be, you know, I do think that there is sort of a wish for like some singular cataclysmic event, be it a financial crisis or which could happen, probably will happen. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it's going to be like the last one where it catches us by surprise and, you know, today's like the financial crisis happened today. You know, I think it's, you know, we're so attuned to that we're basically putting out little financial crises all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're constantly doing it and there's a constant sort of effort to tamp it down. And so it's going to occur in a different way. I don't know exactly how, but I don't think it's going to be a repeat, you know, in every way of like the last one. So there's always going to be like an unpredictable, because if it was predictable, you know what? It wouldn't happen.
Right.
That's the thing. Like the only thing that can happen is actually the unexpected, because the expected is already sort of impossible by the sheer fact of its sort of how expected it is. You know, like then, for example, if we knew how the next financial crisis would occur, you know, we would already put in place things to prevent it from happening. And in fact, that's actually what's going on. Which is why we're not seeing, you know, sort of like generalized banking crisis. We're not seeing generalized financial crises and stuff. Because, you know, we know that that could happen. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know where I'm going with this other than I'm glad we spent 8 years talking it out.
Yeah.
I will say that because the last time you and I talked, we were talking about FIRE. And I've been telling more and more people about my plan to sort of like stop working come February, take some time off. I'm not going to work again, but I'm not going, you know, I'm not grinding anymore. I can't do it. And
do you have like a time frame in mind? Because I mean, you're heading into your late 40s.
Yeah.
Right. Do you have a sense for like you want to take like time off in the unit of years or months or weeks?
You know, I'll probably start out with like, you know, just take 6 months off and see if, and then at the end of 6 months, maybe put myself out for like contract work or whatever like that. See where I'm at. Like, you know, but I'm going to take a healthy amount of time off.
So you're anticipating like no big changes in like the job market in your sector.
I mean, you can't ever really anticipate that.
Sure. No, I know. Yeah. I'm just saying like speaking from tech, which has had like a bitch of a time the last couple of years. That's just top of my mind.
It could totally happen. Yeah, it could totally happen. Without doubt. But in a way, I don't care because like I've come to the point where I've got to take time. I've got to take fucking time right now because my parents are getting really old. I need to spend more time with them. It's a huge luxury in our day and age to even be able to do that. And
yeah, I want to get into that because mm-hmm. I've had thoughts about that too. But please finish. Yeah,
they're my parents. I gotta help them. I've got to be with them. They're in their 80s. You know what I mean? To me, like the way that careerism forces you to be apart from your family and to abandon them like that, and I see it happen, is like the ultimate sort of indignity. You know what I mean? Like that's mm-hmm. really stripping you of some very core human traits. It's very dehumanizing. And I just decided I'm not going to allow it. Like I don't have to, right? Like I'm in a position where I cannot be forced into that. The last thing I want to do is do it to myself, meaning that I train myself such that even though I could, I'm not going to because I have fully internalized this system of dehumanization. And I know that sounds like a radical thing, like I'm making this out to be a bigger deal than it is. It is a big deal. It is a big fucking deal. It's subtle and it's pervasive, and so it doesn't feel like a big deal. But if you really stop, and I've spent a lot of time thinking about this. This isn't like some shit that I thought up the other day as an excuse to work less. But like, it robs you of your basic humanity to not prioritize that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I guess YOLO, right? You got one life to live. And I'm like, you got to make choices. You got to make some choices about what are your priorities. And I'm like, well, I'm going to prioritize spending more time with my elderly parents. And that's that. I mean, doesn't sound very radical to me. It feels kind of strange because I feel like when I tell people this, you know, their reaction a lot of times is like, what are you going to do with all that time? What, how are you, you know, like
human shit.
Yeah. Like
not sending emails around, looking busy, human shit.
Also, why does it matter how I'm going to use that time? I'm just taking my time back. That's literally my time now. Like what, why do I need to plan it or explain to anyone how I'm going to use it? It's none of their fucking business. And it's not a resource. It's not like
I've gotten that question quite a bit though. Like, what are you going to do with your time? Like, are you serious? Like, what are you going to actually do? Like, oh my God. I don't think it's actual like curiosity about what you do with your own time. I think people just lack that template. Like what else could there possibly be? But you won't ask that unless there's something inside you that tells you that how you're living right now is very much not natural. So I think it's just like trying to sound out like Like, okay, what's this person busting out of the pod think about life?
Yeah, I mean,
that's how I always took it.
I agree. I think that there's a certain level at which people are living in perhaps not, like, I don't push it too far. Like, I don't get mad when people say this, but it's like, nor am I going to hold back about what I really think. And I think that because I've lived it, okay, it's not like, you know, I was born with a fucking silver spoon in my mouth. I've had to work my ass off. And I think that the thing that people, I suspect, just based off my own thinking, right, like my own experience, is that we have to tell ourselves some necessary lies in order to cope with the sort of like obligatory nature, the sort of like the non-optionality of what you got to do, which is you got to grind, you got to earn money, you got to make money, and it's not optional, it's not, you know, whatever. And I feel like people don't really want to, in a weird way, it's so obvious, but in a weird way, I feel like it's a reality that a lot of us want to deny. And, you know, we think like, oh yeah, no, actually I really love my job. No, you don't. I mean, you could like your job. I think you could like say, you know, relatively speaking, for someone that's got to like, and I feel that way about my job, actually. I don't hate my job at all. In fact, I feel like I'm one of the luckiest people in the working world right now. Okay. But it's fundamentally like not something that you would ever choose to do if you didn't have to do it. I mean, that's just fucking clearly the case. Mm-hmm. But I feel like we kind of don't really want to know that because it's like, well, what's the use of knowing that? I have to fucking do it. You know what I mean? So this sort of like, yeah, this reaction of like, what are you going to do with all that time? God. Is, I think, part of the avoidance. In my, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to speak for other people, but my guess is it has to do with this avoidance of like the fact that you don't own your own time. You're not free to use your time as you see fit. And so you will kind of want to devalue the notion of time anyway to say, well, we all have too much time on our hands. I mean, what are we going to do with it all? I might as well just give it away to some company or give it away to some career. And at least be productive. At least be productive. Otherwise, what are you just going to sit there on a couch and be useless? That's the sort of, I feel like that is really at the heart of how we view life and work. Is like, yeah, work sucks, but I mean, what else are you going to do? You're trapped in here just like the rest of us. Shut the fuck up. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Well, you know, not all of us are trapped. It depends on the age and your circumstances. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm older. I've got no kids. My expenses are low. My savings are good. So, you know, I'm not particularly worried about that. But yeah, just to get hit with this, like, what are you going to do with all that time? You're going to be over the July 4th weekend. I was being told left and right, you're going to be so bored. You know,
when I first stepped away, yeah, I was really, really bored. And you know what? That boredom felt so good. Because it felt like my neurons weren't frying. They were defrying.
Yeah.
Because you just need that like long period of just fucking silence to reset your brain.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think everyone should have a year-long sabbatical minimum at around age 40. That's my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, I loved the shit out of being bored.
Yeah.
Like, to actually have the span of time to think, like, yeah, I mean, of course you ask yourself, because it's not structured. You have to come up with your own structure for your time. So you can ask, so I ask myself, like, what do I want to do now? What do I want to do next? I mean, so it is kind of scary because you kind of have to be the master of yourself and your own time. There's no like outside, like authoritarian thing, like kind of compelling your actions one way or the other, which it's both constricting, but it's also safe in a way because you don't have to, you don't that's one part of executive function. You aren't responsible for.
That's super. So, do you want to get into that on the, because we're at an hour. Do you want to like do a, that should be the beginning of the bonus
sure.
segment. Cause yeah. I think that's a big,
let's do it.
Okay. All right. So if you want to hear part two, as usual, it will be on the Patreon feed. Go to patreon.com/planamag to get access to the bonus pods, access to the Discord, etc. All right. See y'all.
See ya.